dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers.
To the hackers and the crackers.
I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll sue you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISO? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack.
This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial code, source codes, ISOs, RANs, SIPs, SIPs. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
What?
I said I'm ready, but I won't compete. You're new. You don't know it. So
what is
I?
What is that? What is that from?
It's, you ever seen the DMC Turntable Championships?
I've heard of them. I've never seen them.
Well, in any case, one of the guys, when he won, or not when he won, they did this summit where they had all the guys who had won for like the past 7 years, and his bid was cutting up Gangstar and something else. But he said, I'm ready, but I won't compete. I forget the two songs that it's from, but I'll find it for you.
Oh, hells yeah. Got to go back to some Gangstar.
Yo, it's leaked.
And welcome, everybody, to the latest episode of Binary Revolution Radio, episode number 192. And if you didn't recognize our opening voice this week, that, of course, was our good friend Not Theory returning to the show.
God, you were recording already? I feel so violated.
Well, I didn't record that other stuff we were talking about, you know.
Oh, that's the stuff I wanted people to know about.
Well, that might end up on the outtakes. We'll see.
Word.
But... let's see, 192, I already said that. Today is April 17th, 2007. I am Diggy, back with you once again. I'm going to change my name every week to something like Puff Daddy. So this week I'm Diggy, next week I'll be Doogie. Then I'll be, I don't know, I'll figure it out.
By then, Dougie Fresh?
By then it'll be time to bring back Buck Dangler anyway, so whatever. Bow-chicka-bow-wow. All right, housekeeping section this week. I got nothing. You got any kind of housekeeping for Bell's Mind, or should we wait until later on in the program for that?
We will wait, as there is a tie-in to the subject of the whole show.
A segue, if you will.
Segue!
All right, so, boy, that's a throwback to episode, like, what? I think that goes back to RFA days.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was RFA.
Yeah, wow. Boy, that's a long time ago. I still don't have a Segway. How much are those things now?
I think, have they really gone down all that much? I didn't think so.
I don't know.
I can look it up while you're...
drinking my sweet iced tea and taking us into the email. And we are back to do some email, and I guess we'll start off. What order should I do the email in? Okay, I'm going to start off with this first email from Zell, unless you actually already have the price up there by now.
I'm getting there.
All right.
These guys are...
You fail at the interweb.
I did fail at the interweb. Oh, these guys are selling the new Segway. Oh, shit. I've never seen it before.
What's the difference between the new Segway and the old Segway?
It has cooler wheels on it.
Is it turbo or something?
No, I think it's like, it's all terrain. That's what it is.
Nice. You know, I want a Segway. I want a Segway.
A lot of different versions of this thing.
I want a Segway with hydraulics.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, baby. I'll be like, boom, push, push. I'll be bouncing along left to right. Boom. Pimped out. Tricked my Segway out. All right, well, first email this week comes from Zell. Zell says, while I cannot think of any way to try and increase your bandwidth on an internet connection with 6 different adapters, I do know that NVIDIA's newest motherboard makes it possible to do so with 2 Ethernet cards. In the NVIDIA Inforce 6000 motherboard, you can cheaply do that. And he's got a URL here, but it's NVIDIA.com. You guys can find that pretty easily. The NVIDIA 600 series, they call it, quote, DualNet, a.k.a. really cheap way to add another pipe without getting some insane $10 billion Cisco 8000 series router. I'm not sure if this would work with 2 wireless adapters, but it definitely is a cheaper option to get more bandwidth and redundancy. Cool stuff. P.S. Your show owns. I say that you and RBCP from PhoneLosers.org get together and make a crazy, awesome, freaking podcast. Well, what do you think about that?
Crazy, awesome, freaking podcast. Yeah. Well, I know that you're not really too much of a freak, and despite what some people who know me might think, I'm not much one of one either. So,
aren't you though? What about the whole? Despite what you think, freaking is not dead thing.
Freaking might not be dead, but I don't really know shit about it.
You're supposed to be the savior of freaking. What are you talking about?
Oh, come on, come on. I have a crappy website that has a bunch of phone information on it.
So you've got a database of phone and freaking information.
Yeah, I was going to the history of Bell's Mind at some point, but basically I did Bell's Mind kind of as a favor to everybody in the scene who was into freaking back in the day, and I've been maintaining it ever since. I've left stuff about freaking, but I wouldn't consider myself, master super Lido freak or anything.
Was this back in the days when we were young, not a kid anymore?
Sometimes I wish something, I don't know.
Oh, yes, I owned you on the air! Yes, I got one by you. All right. Some days I sit and wish I was a kid again. You don't remember? Anyway, what'd you find out on the Segway?
Nothing. They don't have prices online. You got to call them for a quote.
Damn, that means they're expensive, but they can't even put a price online.
Yeah, that's why.
Did you try eBay?
eBay's got them, but I didn't know that we were going to go for.
Well, how much can I get like a ghetto used, used by a little old lady who segwayed to the grocery store once every 2 weeks or bingo or something?
You want a Seg hoopty, something that's just jacked up.
That's right.
Void.
Hoopty rolling, muffler dragging.
all righty. Let's see.
Suspension.
They don't have a buy it now. They're up for bidding, but they have no buy it now price, and none of them are close to finish.
Damn, the internet is not cooperating with our research here.
Nah, the closest one I see is at like almost $1,700, but it has a day left to go.
$1,700 and there's a day left to go. Oh man, that could go anywhere within 24 hours. Would you buy one? How much would you be willing to pay for a Segway? Would you pay $1,700?
I would say somewhere in the neighborhood of zero.
You wouldn't have one?
I would, give or take, zero. No, you know what? I was in D.C. recently, and I saw people riding around on them, and I don't know, they look kind of cool, but if it was one of the cool, like, all-terrain ones, I would spend maybe $1,700. I don't know, I guess. Why not?
Yeah, but if it was all-terrain, it would kind of defeat the point to be riding it around D.C. You need to take that shit up
and... No, I'm saying that's where I saw it, and it was cool, but I would want the all-terrain one so that I could go and own noobs with it.
Pwn noobs.
Yeah. Huh. That's what it's all about.
Pwning noobs?
Yeah.
Can you look cool on a Segway, though, honestly? Do you look like when you're... Is it kind of like riding a moped? Do you look like really kind of lame when you're riding a Segway?
I guess. The cops in D.C. don't really look lame because they have guns and they'll just kill you.
Well, that helps, but what about the ordinary people?
Oh, yeah, they look like morons because they've got to wear helmets and there's all this safety equipment and nonsense. They look totally ridiculous.
You have to wear a helmet with those? Is that a law?
Not a law, but this rental place that these people were touring with, you had to wear a helmet.
Yeah, that's probably liability insurance thing, huh?
Yeah.
If I got one, I'd wear a helmet, and I'd wear, like, goggles, and I'd put a scarf around my neck, and I'd, like, starch it so that it looks like I'm going really fast all the time. And I'd wear, like, a cape and some shit, and I'd put a big wire in it so that it looks like I'm flying along at full blast.
Wow, you really have serious issues. be pretty cool, though, but you need to have sound effects with it, too, so it sounded like you were going fast.
Well, don't these things have, like, sound systems and whatnot in them? I could play sound effects.
I don't know. I'm not really as much of an expert on Segways as you think.
Like, either one of us know jack shit. I don't even know if I could spell Segway.
I can pull that off.
Well, now we totally ruined Zell's email here. Let me get back on task here. Have we been drinking or something before the show?
No, I've had like 28 cups of tea, but they're all decaffeinated, so it doesn't really explain it.
Okay, mine aren't decaffeinated, so I've already had a pretty good glass of tea since we've been starting. It's only 10 minutes into the show, if that. All right, anyway, one, I am not a freak, of course, so me on a freaking podcast would be pretty freaking pointless. Oh, that was such a bad pun and so accidental.
Awful. Why would you even bother to make that joke?
I did not do it intentionally. I really didn't. I said freaking because I didn't want to say fucking because people bitch about me cussing on the show. So then when I tried to catch myself and say freaking, it came across as a horrible, like, that's almost, I think that is almost as bad as a Black Ratchet joke, but not quite. Not quite. So anyway, one, not a freak, and two, I'm not sure, Giselle, if you know this already, but the PLA guys, they already have their own show, so go over there and check that out. I don't know that it's really freaking so much as fucking with people, but it's funny, so go check that out. And yeah, RB, CP, and I don't really know each other at all, so that's probably not going to happen. But on to the motherboard and the topic from last week. And I don't know if you heard last week's show yet or ever, but last week somebody had written in asking about sharing network capabilities and whatnot. So these people are replying to it. He's saying about that there is a motherboard that you can buy to do it. Now, that's fine that maybe technically the motherboard can support it. It's got the dual net or whatever this thing is called. That's fine from a technical standpoint, I guess. But logically, I don't see where you would ever really apply these, especially in a home environment. I mean, this particular motherboard, I did look it up. It's some kind of gaming motherboard. It's a high-end. I think it's a little under $200. It's a gaming motherboard. And I don't know, for you to have two Ethernet connections coming in, where are they going to be coming from? I mean, you've got to have two connections of some kind, two different cable modems, two DSL lines coming in.
Well, I mean if you have two different cable modems, you're still on the same cable network. If you have two DSL lines, then maybe that'll work for you, but it's kind of pointless to me.
Well, that's just it. If you're going to have two cable modems, they have to be independent of each other, and you're going to pay for two different connections, and the cable company has to throttle two different pipes into your home, and I don't know what you would gain out of that. I mean, at least, I don't know, I guess it depends on the cable company. My cable company, which actually, if as far as the Internet goes, is Roadrunner, I think, is outsourced to them. They offer like three or four different levels. So instead of adding a second level of it, I would just upgrade to the 9 or 12 megabit per second connection instead of trying to double up on two fives or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So logically, doesn't make much sense to me. Same thing with the DSL. You'd have to pay for two different DSL lines.
Yep.
I mean, the money that you're spending there, it's not free. I mean, so the money you're spending there, I don't see where financially you'd get much benefit. If you need that much bandwidth for whatever you're doing, particularly for the upload, and most of those are download-only speeds, remember. So I don't know what you'd gain out of that. If you need that much bandwidth at home, then you should be looking to co-locate a box somewhere or get a dedicated server in a data center somewhere. Can I get an amen?
I would tend to think so. And without, like, proper, you know, routing support on the ISP side, it's not going to do you much good anyway. Like, all the fancy stuff you want to do involving having multiple network cards and all that, you're just not going to be able to do.
Yeah, that's just it. It's really not something that can be done easily, we'll say, even remotely easily. And actually, I think this is a good segue into our next email from RHNNet. RHNNet says, "Hey, Stank Dog and Not Theory. I've been listening to the show for a long time and really enjoyed it. Keep up the great work. On episode 191, Stank talked about using multiple network connections to acquire more bandwidth. This is definitely possible if one is connecting multiple times to the same network, although a connection does not automatically go over both. However, if you have a switch or Linux box on both ends that supports trunking, then you can. Some useful sites are, and he gives a tiny URL to BMWWO, and tiny URL 29NNRW. I do this on my Gentoo boxes, and it works great. iPod and Astra support soon. Now, for multiple internet connections, i.e. multiple gateways, it can be done, although you cannot have 2 5 megabit per second pipes and expect to download at 10 megabits per second. Rather, two 5 megabit per second downloads, although downloading two parts of the file at once would work. Some good places to start are tinyurl 2ad3ow and tinyurl 2ho4v6. Thanks for the show. That was RHNNet. Now, I think I fumbled through that email, but I think he was kind of alluding to what you were saying as far as you having to have the right equipment and the switching backbone behind there to make sure that it's handling the traffic the way you want it to. And since a home user, most of that stuff is out of your hands and out of your area of control.
Yeah, so I don't know how that gaming motherboard really does anything exciting with dual mix, but...
Yeah, the only thing I could think is one going out to your internet connection and the other one going to some sort of internal network of some kind, but of course that's not affecting your bandwidth. I mean, I don't get that. I don't see what that motherboard's for either, truthfully.
I don't know. Maybe somebody will write in and tell us.
I'm sure they will.
Stupid.
Well, I think we might get a lot of email for this show because when we go into our topic later on, we're going to probably prove our ignorance on this something, but we'll see. From RHNNet, he had a very clever email introduction, so I do appreciate that. That was not lost on me. Some PHP code in there to kind of dynamically assign the users, so that was kind of cool. And hopefully these links that he sent are interesting, but again, it's a lot of work for something that's just going to have so many problems along the way, and even if you got it working, the cost of what it is, I don't see it happening. Home user, not really. Businesses, yeah, they can financially justify it somehow, but a home user, not so much. And our last email this week comes from Stack Smasher. Now, I read this email on the show last week. However, I thought that considering my present company that I could read this again on the email this week and let him respond to it. Stack Smasher said last week, any word on when, if ever, www.freakfactor.net will be back. Thanks, and as always, keep up the good work. So, yeah, give me the opportunity now to read it again and pose the question to you, Not Theory. When will Freak Factor, not just the website, www.net, but when will Freak Factor the show, the Freak Factor the experience, when will it all be back?
I don't know. To tell you the truth, I've never heard of it, so I'm reading their website now. I don't know.
AboutUs.org?
Well, hey, FreakFactor.net, it has been up for a long time, and as you can tell, it hasn't really changed pretty much ever. Actually, no, that's not true. I changed the phone number at some point.
True, yep, when the Bell's Mind number changed.
That was it. Okay. Freak Factor is on its way. I've said that before, and I know I've said that I've said that before.
And we've said that before on your behalf because you told us to say that it was coming.
Yeah. So hey, well, in my defense, it still is coming. It's just not there yet.
Well,
in any case, there have been significant updates and some serious progress towards getting Freak Factor running. Freak Factor, when the show is actually live, it's going to be done through the Bell's Mind webpage for technical reasons that I'll explain later. But I don't know. I've had a lot of free time lately, so I figured that I would spend it working on that.
What's that?
You can actually see some of the progress that has been made towards it and get kind of a feel as to how it's going to look by going on to the Bell's Mind website, going to the NPA NXX search, and if you have a Bell's Mind account, logging in and checking out. There's a tab that will pop up that says PBX status. And the new Freak Factor is going to be using the same type of, like, Ajax refreshing fancy nonsense that you see on that page. If you don't have an account, you can't check it out. It's too bad. But I'm working on getting the registration up and running. Registration between Freak Factor and Bell's Mind will be shared. So if you have a Bell's Mind account, it'll be also your Freak Factor account. So when you log in, you'll see your Freak Factor credentials, and then you can call it PBX. Get it all together. It'll be kind of like DDP's own little passport, because everybody loves passports.
Single sign-on.
Yeah, single sign-on. And you know, we'll later integrate it with Passport and Google and Yahoo. So
exactly.
You only need one password for
everything. And the forums.
And the forums, of course. So, that's about it. I can't, I would love to get a date, but I'm done with trying to say, oh, it'll be done in 3 weeks or something like that. If you want to know when it's going to be done, basically go to Bell's Mind, watch the progress that's being made on the PBX status page, and eventually there will be a silly little blog posting, because everybody loves blogs, explaining when Freak Factor is almost done, and I'm going to probably ask a few people to help me test it out. So once it gets around that time, I will pick a few people to help us out, and we'll get to testing it and see how it works. But I don't know. As of right now, it's close, but not close enough to get a date.
Very nice.
Very nice, I like.
Wow, wow, wee, wow. All right. Well, I've been playing around and testing it. I think it's pretty cool. Let's just make it happen.
I'm trying.
And
I'm just one man.
As far as the... And what is this free time of which you speak? I'm not familiar with this term.
Well, you have free time, don't you? Come on.
This is it. Recording this show is my free time.
Oh, wow. Well,
And it's why there wasn't a show there for the last 2 or 3 weeks, because I didn't have any free time.
Well, I got to tell you, I quit my job in December, and I haven't really looked back.
Nice. How's that feel?
It's pretty much the best feeling I've ever had in my entire life, doing nothing.
However, you still force yourself to work 20 hours a day, somehow.
I keep myself busy.
There you go.
But hey, a lot of it's all tied in. It's all entangled together.
Well, and yeah, actually, this is something you and I talk about all the time anyway, about, for example, I hate learning a new language or doing something where I have to do Hello World type applications and bullshit like that and fucking Towers of Hanoi and this other crap. I'd rather jump into something and start doing it and learning it and actually building an application or something useful with that technology. And even if I'm not building something specifically like a project of some kind, I'm working on code and I'm thinking of how I can apply it, how try to write the code in such a way to be reusable so that we can use it for other projects. So that's kind of a good segue, I guess, because you mentioned earlier about changing in the change in technology over on Bell's Mind and some of the stuff that you're doing, which will segue into our topic this week, does it not?
Possibly. I'm afraid I'm just going to get a lot of hate mail my choice. Actually, if people have checked out the Bell's Mind blog, they've probably seen that there's been a change from PHP. There is no more PHP code running the Bell's Mind site. I don't know if people are going to be upset about that or not, but there are very good reasons behind it.
Well, if it's not running PHP, what is it running?
Well, it's not running PHP, of course, like you just said. It's not running Ruby on Rails, because we've already been through that, and everybody's told me I'm a moron and that Ruby on Rails is the greatest thing ever, but I still say that they're wrong.
Well, the only other option that comes to mind is that very topic that you hate so much and you've spoken about on the show for years that you despise. So I know it couldn't possibly be anything Java-related, could it?
No, I don't really think so. As a matter of fact, now that you said that, I don't even remember what language the site's running, so I'd rather just not talk about it.
Okay, well, this week's show was brought to you by... that unfortunately has become the fact of the matter, isn't it, that you are incorporating some Java... Well, now, see, here's the thing. Here's what I want to talk about on the show tonight. Because I don't really care for Java too much, mostly because I find the whole Java world, the whole Java environment, not technical environment, the whole Java sphere, I don't know, to be insanely confusing. And the whole write once, run anywhere thing, I think, is such a joke, such an absolute misnomer. I don't know. I still don't get Java. I see some of the applications of it on a case-by-case basis, but I still get confused as hell by Java. Now that you have been playing around with some of this stuff lately, are you feeling more comfortable with Java? On a
I'm
serious...
feeling more comfortable with programming in Java, but if you ask me the difference between any version of Java and any other version, I would tell you that I have no idea. And I probably won't have any idea because I've been doing Java programming and I haven't needed to know the difference. So when I need to know the difference, I'll learn it. But until then, I don't care.
Well, and that's kind of my experience as well. I, for those who don't know, I do a lot of my programming. I do database programming, mostly in Oracle. And I know that Oracle is getting more and more tied in with Java. They've already got a very strong relationship, we'll say, with Sun. I don't know why they haven't bought Sun Microsystems by now. But anyway, the stock is like 7 cents a share or something, I think. It's like, it's such garbage right now. But
and it's still not even worth buying.
Yeah. No, it is. I think it is around, it's still less than $3 a share, isn't it? Or somewhere around $3 a share.
I don't know.
I haven't checked in a while.
I'm not really a Sun fan, so I don't know.
Yeah,
don't
so. Anyway, yeah, Sun Oracle, I should say, cooperates very well with Sun, but Oracle is slowly adding a lot of support for Java into its database engine, and when the next version comes out, it's supposed to be supporting actually native Java code internal to Oracle, not separate programs that you execute through the operating system, through Solaris or through whatever, you know, whatever operating system, because Oracle also runs on Red Hat and all kinds of other Linux flavors, et cetera, but actually internal support. They're calling them, an unfortunate name in my opinion, JSP or Java Stored Procedures.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll kind of back off that and come a little bit later to why that's an unfortunate name in my opinion, but it's like within the context of programming something in Oracle, I can see the application of the language. What I don't see is why they chose Oracle and not one of any other number of languages that they could have done the same thing with. So, I don't know. It's still a little... It's kind of like if you... Oh, what's a good example? Like if you... what was it? Weren't people writing... Didn't Quake or something come with its own internal language, some kind of C derivative where you could actually write and code your own maps and mods for the game?
Yeah, they had Quake C.
Yeah, Quake C. So it's a language that's designed to work with that specific application. So I understand within that context a reason to learn Quake C. But outside of that context, I still don't see the point of using it. Now, Quake C is an obvious example, but I feel the same way about Java. And when I say Java, I'm talking about the whole of all the different Javas and stuff like that. When we talk about individual applications of Java, that's where it gets a little messy. So I'm not even really sure where to start with this topic, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I guess I'll first explain, like, how I decided one day that Java wasn't a piece of garbage. And maybe I'll even... Let's go back even further than that. Why I initially thought Java was a piece of garbage. Actually...
I think the feds are outside of your door. I hear them coming, driving up.
Oh, no. Actually, I'm in Westchester County right now, and it's been raining pretty badly all day, so they... Everywhere has been flooding, and I think there's been flooding in New York City as well, and like surrounding areas. But the cops and fire department have been up and down the street all day. I don't know what they're exactly rushing to. It's probably like, you know, things catching on fire because their people's basements are flooding and their power's shorting out. I have no idea, but it's been an exciting day today.
Nice.
We'll probably hear a lot more of that as the show goes on.
All right, it adds to the excitement.
Yeah, dog.
Yeah, dog. Why you gotta be stealing my shit?
Oh, come on.
All right, you can have it.
Borrow your lines?
You can borrow it.
I thought in a relationship you share everything.
Yeah, well, listen. Some of us give and some of us receive. That's all I'm saying.
Ouch.
Oh, burn.
And physically.
Why'd you gotta go there?
I don't know.
Anyway.
So, let me explain. I went to school for a computer science degree. I have a bachelor's in computer science. One of my classes was a software engineering class. It was a class I didn't need to take. I just opted to take it because it sounded cool. And at the time, they were doing their software engineering in Java. I think they still are, actually. It's like a really popular language for software engineering classes. So in any case, we went through all this stuff. My biggest problem with the class was that I couldn't understand anything the professor was saying. And the projects were really, really, really simple, so I just, you know, figured I would bang them out in Java and it'd be no big deal. But at the time, at least I didn't know of any development environment for Java, so I ended up doing everything in a regular text editor on the command line, and I was programming some, you know, spreadsheet-ish type application in Java using FWT, which is the Swing toolkit, I think.
Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah, it was awful. And like I said, there was no debugger, there was no development environment, there was no nothing. Now, I'm sure everyone's going to say, not everybody, but a lot of people are going to say, oh, you don't need a development environment, you don't need a fancy debugger, you know, you can use printfs or system.out.println or whatever Java has. You can do all your debugging like that. Yeah, you know what? When you're developing a tooling application, yeah, you can do that. But when your application starts to get bigger, you kind of grow out of that. So, yeah, for this thing, that's what I did, and I got through it. But, I started using other languages like, you know, C++, so I had Borland C++ Builder. Like, the development environment was really slick, and I said, you know what? I don't want to use Java because the tools that I was aware of at the time were garbage. And back then, Java was so slow, it was unbelievable.
That hasn't changed.
Well, we'll get into that.
Yeah.
So for the longest time, nobody could change my mind. I thought Java was garbage. I had heard, you know, there were nice development environments for it now, but, you know, I thought, okay, well, you know, for my web stuff, PHP is the way to go, and for my, you know, server-based stuff, Perl is the way to go, because PHP's got a lot of modules, Perl has a lot of modules, there's a lot of example code out there, and everything's great. But then I kind of thought about it, and I was like, well, I don't really have a good development environment for PHP. Supposedly there's, you know, there's an Eclipse plugin for PHP, but I don't know. I've tried a bunch of things, and nothing has really worked all that well for me.
Mm-hmm.
So for a long time, I had been looking for a good replacement for PHP. Then I found Ruby on Rails and realized that that was definitely not the good replacement for PHP.
No, wait a minute. You loved Ruby at first.
You know something I did, and then there were just... I'm pretty sure on the last show I had said this, but the guy who came up with Ruby on Rails made some comment about how stored procedures were, you know, useless. You know, anybody who's using them is just using them because it's like an old database guy way of thinking, which is just nonsense, you know. And his comment revolved around the fact that, you know, all applications have one interface that people are using to get to them. If you're writing a Ruby on Rails application, it's got a database. You're always accessing it through Ruby on Rails. Why do you need stored procedures? That's just not true. It's not realistic. So that turned me off to Ruby on Rails. You know, and people said, oh, you can use stored procedures in Ruby on Rails, and you can violate the standards that they have to put Ruby on Rails on your old database scheme and all that stuff. Yeah, that's true. But by default, it's designed to not let you do that. Not let you do it, but make it more difficult. So, you know, why deal with the hassle? You know, it didn't really offer me anything good. It gave me a quick way to get an application up and running that looked like a canned Ruby on Rails application, but beyond that, it didn't really offer me what I wanted. So I just dropped it. I didn't really care anymore.
Gotcha. Well, and also, before we move on, I wanted to respond to one of the other comments you made that I agree with, is basically error handling in general and any kind of debugging. It frustrates me all the time. I programmers that I work with all the time still are in that mindset of, you know, throwing a bunch of print statements or, you know, DBMS output statements of some kind into your code so that as it cycles through there, it spits out some raw text as you go through. Like, that's a good way to debug stuff. I mean, that is so old school. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's been some occasions where if you really want to isolate it, you'll have to really get down in there and try that. Or if you want to display some of your variables in progress, you might want to do that. But there's so many. Modern languages have so many different and better ways of error handling that you should never have that mindset anymore, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's ridiculous to think that you would do that. Now, don't get me wrong. There are environments where, you know, printf and all that stuff is the way to go, especially if something's running in real time. Like, you can't use a debugger easily on a real-time system, so you need to have stuff spitting out to the screen as it's running. But for me, I'm not developing many real-time systems. So, you know, I need a development environment. I need, like, a real way to debug my application. So,
gotcha.
Anyway. So, fast forward a whole bunch of months. I took a job, and I was dealing with these devices that were programmed in Java, and everybody at the company was a Java programmer, and everybody kept telling me how great Java was. And I kept telling them, Java sucks. they
took you to task.
They realized that I was a bit of a Linux guy. They needed a Linux guy to do some work for them. So they sent me over to Germany to meet with the branch of the company that writes the Java code for these devices that they run. I went over there, and I had told them for the longest time, I said, I will do any job at this company except Fluffer and Java programmer, because they're pretty much the same thing.
Okay.
So they got me over to Germany, and they said, well, we would like you to program in Java. And I was like, oh, my God. But I bit my tongue. I said, you know what? Let me see what these guys have to show me.
Right.
The first thing they had me do was they had me download Eclipse. Downloaded Eclipse, installed it, and then they gave me the source code.
Well,
and
Eclipse is what now? Explain.
You know, people say Eclipse is an editor, but Eclipse is not an editor. Eclipse is a software development kit where you can build editors, but you can actually build other applications that have nothing to do with editing text. So Eclipse, people have taken Eclipse, and they've built a text editor into it and a class browser and a debugger and like a whole development environment for all kinds of languages, Java being the one that I think, at least from what I've seen, is the best supported. Eclipse itself is written in Java, so therefore it eats lots of memory and it's very slow, but it's good.
Whatever happened to Forte?
NetBeans. You know, for a long time, actually, the original DDP Freak Tools, or was it Freak Toys? No, it was Freak Toys. A long time ago, was written in Java, J2ME, and I was using Sun 1, which was Forte NetBeans, and it seemed like every time I opened the application, it said, hey, there's an update. By the way, we've changed the name again. So I don't know whatever happened with them. I'm sure that it's still around, but I don't know anybody that uses it. The two development environments that I know people use for Java are Eclipse and this thing called, I think it's pronounced IntelliJ. It's just spelled IntelliJ with a capital J at the end. IntelliJ is something you have to pay for, and Eclipse is free and sponsored by IBM. But I've only used Eclipse, so I can't really talk about IntelliJ.
Okay.
So.
Well, I also have the bachelor's in science, and when I had to do Java in college, we had to use Forte, and I hated every miserable second of that thing.
Yeah, it was.
And Tomcat. Tomcat. Web surfer.
Well, actually, you know what? You know, maybe we'll get into that in just a minute or two.
All right, go ahead.
So these guys sat me down, and they basically told me, you know, we'd like to see what you can do with the tools we've given you. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I haven't written Java since 2001 or 2002 when I wrote these Freak Toys, and it was J2ME, so this is going to be a big pain in the ass. So I took their development kit for this device, sat down, and in no time I had, you know, an application up and running. And it had, the development environment has whatever you want to call it, IntelliSense, where like you type a variable name and or you type a class name and hit, you know, the dot key and then like control space and it lists all of the elements in that class. Like,
right.
All of that nice stuff that
all the methods. That,
what's that?
Brings up all the methods and all that stuff.
Yeah, it brings up all the methods and all the data members and stuff like that and tells you the difference between each one and like can pull the Java doc from the source, so if you have a real comment on it that says what it is, it pops up in the window. So I was like, wow, this is really easy. Anybody could write applications with tools like this.
Right.
So, I mean, even the lowest common denominator like me.
Well,
so,
or I think the same thing would be said for Visual Studio.
You know something? I use Visual Studio a lot, and honestly, compared to Eclipse and Java, Visual Studio is not so great.
Really?
So I think that is because that I kind of, after using it for a little while, I actually like the Java way of doing things, which is more of a language thing as opposed to an environment thing.
Okay.
So.
Other than the garbage collection, automatic garbage collection, I don't know what other benefit, but anyway, go ahead with the story. We're jumping in with so many different.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
So that was, you know, that was kind of it. I looked back at all of my misspent years and said, maybe Java's not that crappy. So I wrote the application, played around with it, was fairly impressed by what Java could do. So I started looking into other things that, that Java could do, like writing web applications in it. A long time ago, I had a coworker slash boss who tried to get me to learn Java servlets for his business at the time, and I was like, oh no, PHP is the way to go. Java servlets are junk. Java's slow. Java's crap. Blah 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 blah. Yeah. Well, now I'm looking at the servlets again, and servlets are actually pretty cool.
Well, so, should we take a moment here to talk about servlets and applets and the different? And this is the thing that confuses me the most and gets me frustrated with Java is all these different terms. There's a what's the difference between a servlet, an applet, a Java bean, a, you know, all these different things.
Okay, well, that's kind of difficult. Like I said, I'm a Java noob. I can write things in Java, but I don't know all of the standards and why, you know, why thing called XYZ is different from thing called ABC. Now, my understanding, and feel free to write in and tell me that I'm totally stupid, is that there's a base Java object which has no methods, no parameters, no nothing. It's just an object that is just kind of like a placeholder. And then there's a Java applet and Java application and Java servlet. These things all inherit this object, and they give it different methods that you have to implement. Like for an application, you have to implement the main method, and then the main method will start your whole application running. An applet does the same thing, but I think that applets only run in your web browser. I don't know why exactly they're different from applications. I guess applets have a graphical user interface always, and applications can run on the command line. That's what I originally thought was the difference, but I could be wrong about that too. So in any case, applets and applications, they have a main method that starts up and runs your application. Servlets are just Java code that has two entry points. One is called doGet, and one is called doPost. And one is called when somebody hits your servlet URL with a GET request. The other one's called when somebody hits your servlet URL with a POST request. That's it. So there's nothing really, I wish there was more to it that I could explain to you, but basically it just means that this type of object has this entry point, the main method, or this one has these two entry points, doGet and doPost, which just basically tells it where to start and what to start doing. That's it. I mean, that's as simple as I can make it out to be. Does that make any sense?
Well, somewhat, but you know, I wish I could get Voodoo Hal. I know he did a lot of Java development at one point. Or, you know what, I guess put a call out to the listening audience right now, if anybody who can write in, email us, radio@binrev.com, and explain this to me, because I still don't see, like, I see on an individual basis, you know, an applet is running on the client side versus a servlet on the server side. I get that, but why would I choose, how would I make the decision of which way I wanted to do it? And, you know, then there's JSP, Java Server Pages, I mentioned earlier, which I thought was an unfortunate name for Java Stored Procedures as well, because you can get confused there. And that's more like PHP and ASP, where it's dynamically generating code, or I mean, there's just so many things. Java Beans, I still don't know what that is. And J2ME, J2EE, all these different abbreviations, it's so confusing that it's so frustrating and so confusing, it makes me not want to learn it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, the difference between J2ME and J2SE and J2EE, well, let's go through the names first. J2SE is Java 2 Standard Edition, I think. And J2ME is...
Mobile?
I thought it was mobile, but somebody told me recently that it's micro edition, so it could be more than just for, like, mobile phones, mm-hmm. for any type of device. And then there's J2EE, which is enterprise edition, which people use to build huge, bloated enterprise apps.
Now, those were the names of the IDEs themselves. You would download, if you wanted to develop mobile apps or mini apps or whatever that is, you would download the J2ME IDE package.
No, they just they refer to different, you know, to different standards. Like J2SE is you can write applications in this way, these type of specific set of features available to you. Same thing with ME, same thing with EE. You know, it just means that you have different functionality available to you. But you could use Eclipse will let you program in any of these things without downloading too much extra junk to get them up and running.
Hmm. Okay.
So it doesn't really matter which IDE you use, but as long as it supports that standard, it's not really what the IDE is called.
Okay, so just all the objects and methods that apply to each one are the ones you'd be working with, depending on what your application is for.
Right.
Okay.
So, now where was I last? We're so far, like, off topic, so I'm just confused.
I don't know that we really had a topic. I think we're going to kind of freestyle the whole thing, but you were talking about using that IDE and found that you were able to develop a lot faster than you expected.
Oh, yeah. So I decided that I would try to look a little bit more into Java and see what it had to offer me. And there were a few nice things that Java did for web applications that PHP doesn't do. Now, I know, no matter what I say, if I say PHP doesn't do something, someone is going to write in and say, yes, it does. So I'm just going to concede right now that I'm totally wrong. So if you want to write in and tell me that I'm totally wrong, I agree with you. So
well, but it's one of those things where, you know, it may be able to do it, but that doesn't mean it does it well. It doesn't mean it's, you know, natively supported. It may be forcing that square peg into a round hole. Just because you can make it happen, make it work, doesn't mean it's efficient, good, proper, secure way to do it.
Right,
I mean, it may do it, but it might not do it well. And I think you can safely say that.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, I had a problem where I wanted to be able to debug the whole Bell's Mind site on my laptop without interrupting the whole production side of things. And I could do that with, like, a hidden directory that had the code checked out to a different location and all that other kind of stuff. But it just wasn't convenient because I had to, like, keep going back and forth to the server. I wanted to do everything local on my laptop. So the advantage for Java was that I could very easily just fire up the development environment and run my application locally, hook it up to that remote database over a VPN tunnel that I have, and just run the application on my laptop, and, you know, the server's not affected at all. The server isn't running any of this new, untested code, so if the code freaks out and does something totally horrible, it's not going to, like, destroy the performance of the production box. So that was nice thing one. Nice thing two was the actual development environment, being able to set breakpoints and stepping through the code. And actually, Java lets you change your code on the fly, and as soon as you save it, it recompiles it, and then it jumps back to whatever the top of the function you're in is, and you can start debugging again. So if I've got a loop that I realize I messed up, you know, essentially the escape clause for it, I can go and change it while it's running. When I notice that I'm locked in an infinite loop, I can change it while it's running. It goes back to the top of the function, like they're stepping through again, so I don't have to, you know, constantly restart my debugging process from scratch. So that was a really nice feature. The other really nice feature was that I could create static classes on the server. And basically what a static class is whenever the web server starts up and it loads all of my classes into memory, it instantiates, basically creates this static class that when any user is hitting the website, they're getting access to this one instance of this object. So if I have a big object that has a whole bunch of data in it, there's only one copy of it on the server, so it's very efficient. Like, everybody's hitting the same copy, whereas with PHP, again, I could be wrong, if you've got Zend and all kinds of other optimization things turned on, when somebody hits the site, it's reading that PHP file, it's parsing it, it's creating all of these objects on the fly in its own memory space. So as you have people hitting it over and over and over again, it's got to keep doing all of this work continually. Whereas with Java, you put the objects on the server, you instantiate them, they're built once, and you just hit them and pull the data out of them. And I've noticed in my informal testing that the performance on Bell's Mind with Java servlets as opposed to PHP is much, much, much faster, specifically with the beta version of the prefetched code that I've been testing. The server load is a lot lower than it was with the PHP implementation. And that's not to say the PHP implementation was good and efficient, but it was very, very easy to make a good and efficient implementation in Java. So that was a big boost to me.
And surprisingly responsive, too, I'll add. I was very impressed at the real-time data that I was looking at.
Yeah, right now I have the settings kind of turned up as high as they can be. If you go to the Bell's Mind interface and you check out the PBX status panel, that status panel refreshes once every second. So with me and Stank Diggy over here checking it out, it's very fast, very low server load compared to the same PHP script that was running before. Now, again, that wasn't very efficient, and it had to do a lot of things in the background to connect to the database and do all this other kind of stuff, and it refreshed the whole page as opposed to just refreshing part of the page. So that script was a lot heavier to start out with, but again, this is very easy to create and very responsive, and I don't know, it's just badass. You have to check it out. So check it out. Pull up that page, sign into the PBX, and kind of navigate around the menus, and you'll see that it shows you, you know, it doesn't show you your caller ID or anything like that. It just shows you a random user number for each person that calls in, and then it'll show you, you know, where you are in the PBX. If you're listening to RSA episode 58, like somebody was today, it's going to say, this user has been on the PBX since this time, and they're listening to RSA 58. Hit the pound key, get back out to the main menu, and it'll say that you're at the main menu. If you go into a conference, it'll say that you're in a conference. One of the neat features that you'll also notice, if you go into a conference, any conference number between 500 and 599, it'll actually show you. Those are going to be considered public conferences now. So people can go on the PBX status page, and they'll be able to look and see, oh, people are in conference, you know, 500. There's like 8 people in there, and they're all, you know, you can see when people are talking and when people are not talking, all that kind of stuff.
You mean all, you know, all damn good and well, all of them are talking at the same time.
Well, yeah, of course. But in theory, if they weren't all, you know, just constantly chattering and pressing touch tones and doing all that kind of nonsense, that it would, the status would change from talking to not talking. But yeah, probably nobody will ever see not talking on there. So whatever, that's that. So like I said, static objects. I actually have a static object that what it does is when the application is deployed, and I'll get to the deployment in a second, which was kind of where I was going initially. When the application is deployed, this object starts up, connects to Asterisk, and then connects to Asterisk over the manager interface, and then anytime something happens on the PBX, Asterisk pushes this message to the Java application, and the Java application keeps the state of the whole PBX in memory. Whereas before with PHP, since I couldn't start a process in the background and keep it running, I know there are ways to do it, but not as easy as there are in Java. I couldn't start a process in the background, so what I'd have to do is every time I needed the status, I wanted the status of PBX, I'd have to connect and request all the status that I want and then disconnect. Well, with Java, I just tell this thing, start a thread, listen to this connection, get the status all the time. That was performance saving bit number one right there. That reduced server load unbelievably. You can't even imagine. So let's think. What was the other big deal? The other thing that it does is it also handles AGI requests via fast AGI. So again, previously I had AGIs written in Perl.
And AGI is Asterisk Gateway Interface?
Yeah, exactly. Sorry. AGI is basically a way to write applications that can receive information from the user, touch tones, or, you know, even voice on some of them from what I've heard, but I've never done it. So basically can accept touch tones from people and kind of route them around. You write a program like a Perl script that says, okay, when the user hits 4, you know, go to the ANAC or whatever it is. Well, the problem with the Perl AGIs is that every time somebody goes into one of those AGIs, it has to start up Perl, and then it has to start the AGI and then connect back to the PBX. Well, again, with Java, I created a static object that connects to Asterisk once, and then anytime somebody wants to start an AGI, it just pushes a message over that pipe that's already open, and then, you know, they communicate back and forth, and the Java AGI just processes the call for me with very, very little overhead. Nothing has to start up every time somebody connects, none of that nonsense. Just kind of, it's already loaded, and it happens. The first time somebody calls the PBX, there's a slight delay because those things are, like, being built, but once they're built, there's no more delay for people. So that all happens when the application is deployed. So that was one of the big things that I really liked. I can start a process, I can run it in the background, I can have it do whatever I want, and I don't have to keep starting it every time somebody hits a page or with a cron job or something like that. It just happens by magic. Don't have to keep Perl scripts running in the background, using screen, like all of these things I had to do to get FreeFactor up and running. I don't have to do any. everything's nice and clean. Everything's encapsulated in objects, so it's very easy for me to go through and add new features and do all that kind of stuff. But in any case, the real big deal, like I was saying before, is debugging and deployment. So I've already gone through debugging. Debugging is, you know, very easy through Eclipse. Deployment is the really, really nice thing. With the Eclipse IDE, I can take all of my files for Bellsmine, all the static content, all the servlets, all this AGI stuff, and I can export it as a WAR file, which Java applications stored in JAR files, which stands for Java Archive.
Right.
Well, web applications are stored in WAR files, which I believe stands for Web Archive.
Okay.
So what I do with the Web Archive file is I take it, I export it, and then I use a program called Unison, which then takes that archive file and puts it in the Tomcat server, because I know you love Tomcat, puts it in its web apps directory, and Tomcat every once in a while will look, you know, it's like every couple of seconds or something like that, will look and say, oh, the WAR file's changed. I'm going to take all the old content, get rid of it, pull everything out of this archive, and put it on the server and start everything over. So anytime I need to make a change, I know that everything is there. Everything's included in this one file, and the server will shut itself down and restart cleanly just when I essentially drag that file over. So it avoids all of the headaches of, oh, did I put this file in, or did I make sure that this link matches, all that other kind of stuff. Don't have to worry about that anymore. Everything's in one file. Everything gets extracted at one shot. Overwrites the old copy, so no old junk is sitting around. And again, it just works.
But what do you think
about them apples?
Well, I don't know. I can't say that I've written anything worthwhile in Java, to be honest with you. When I was in college, all the stuff I did was JSP, Java Server Pages, and it was, again, a whole specific application of some type of Java, which again still confuses the hell out of me sometimes. I don't know why anybody would choose JSP again over ASP or PHP or whatever, other than the fact that maybe they're running Microsoft environment, they might be forced to use ASP or... Yeah, well, that's pretty much the only word to say it. But here's something else that bugs me about Java, and let me throw this out there and see what you feel about this.
Okay, sure.
Virtual machines.
Yeah.
Okay, Java proclaims to be write once, run anywhere.
Right.
As though somehow it's this mythical language that I can write code one time and it's magically going to work anywhere that Java is available. So first of all, if that's the case, my first thing that makes me wonder is, well, what about back to what you said earlier about the J2ME, J2SE, J2EE? Each one of those is different depending on where you're planning on deploying this application. So how can you write code that's going to work on all three of those if all three of those have different ways of doing things? Secondly, well, actually, let's stop there. First of all, where am I going wrong with that thought process?
No, you know, I'm in the same boat. People say Java, write once, run anywhere. It's not really true. If that was true, you would have, you know, fewer standards. And even when you're using the same standard, even if you're using, let's say, J2EE. You mentioned Tomcat before. I'm pretty sure, now, of course, this is going to show everybody that I'm a super noob when it comes to Java. I'm pretty sure that my application is J2EE. And the only reason I think that is because when I try to use just the plain old Java mode in Eclipse, nothing works. So anyway.
Yeah, and is it going to work in another server besides Tomcat, or are there different hooks for other applications? So you'd actually have to change the libraries and the objects and all that kind of stuff.
Right, well, that's what I'm getting to. I wrote mine and tested mine on Tomcat. Now, supposedly, if I had the same application, I should be able to use it on another Java web server, or I think they call them servlet containers. But we'll forget about that. There are a few other Java web servers that I'm aware of. First is Tomcat, the one that I use. Then there is JBoss, which is by Red Hat, I think, or Red Hat owns it now, but maybe JBoss was on its own before, something like that.
Mm.
So then there's also WebSphere by IBM,
right.
And I think that there's another one by a company called BEA called WebLogic, maybe, Web something, I don't know. In any case, the company that I was working for that took me over to Germany and got me all hyped up about Java, they have a J2EE application that runs on JBoss and WebSphere. Well, the deployment aspect that I was talking about before, which was really nice in Tomcat, where I take my WAR file from my desktop and I rsync it over the network and it just plop it in this directory and then my new website's there and it does everything for me. Not so much on this, like, really big enterprise system. Now, granted, it's because a system like that requires more configuration, but the installation instructions for WebSphere and for JBoss were so vastly different. It was just amazing. I don't even know how to do an installation on WebSphere, whereas with JBoss I could do it in a couple of minutes. WebSphere, there were just a million steps, and you needed, like, certified WebSphere people to do everything. It was a mess. To me, that is not, that is, like, counter to the whole idea of write once and run anywhere.
Right. Well, and not only that, okay, the other thing is, and this is where I was going, I guess, with virtual machines, is you're... Every environment that's going to be working in needs a virtual machine that's going to be able to interpret and run that Java code. Mm-hmm. So you have to download a virtual machine for Windows, one for Unix, one for Linux, for I don't know how different, if they run for BSD, for all the different environments and stuff, and then for all the different versions of it. I'm sure there's some for different PDAs, cell phones, etc. All these different virtual machines, and then Oracle, for example, that I talked about earlier, it's going to have basically built-in virtual machines so that it can natively support Java stored procedures. So the applications may have virtual machines built into them. If you have to download and install a virtual machine to make the code run, it's not really write once, run anywhere at all. The whole concept of that, to me, is bizarre because... It's not write once, run anywhere. It's write once, run anywhere, as long as you have pre-installed the virtual machine for said environment.
Well, I mean, you've got to have some type of in-between that gives you, you know, a bridge to the actual operating system. Like, it's very difficult to write just a fucking executable file that's going to run on all these different platforms. Not to say that it hasn't been done, because it has, but it's a big mess.
Well, it's just that I just don't like the idea that they purport themselves to be such a beast, and people actually believe this concept that, yeah, you just write some code anywhere, and then you just copy it over to Linux, and you run it there just the same. You don't have to change anything, and then you'll run it and put it on your cell phone, and it'll run just fine. Well, no, bullshit. It does not at all.
Yeah. Well,
and I would even argue that even closer to write once, run anywhere, even closer than Java, I would argue that ANSI standard C is closer to that than Java, because it's a standard, it's an ANSI standard, and the environments, as long as they support the ANSI standards, which most do, and that holds true for any language, to me is more portable than anything. If I write a ANSI standard program on Linux, I can bring it over, compile it, and run it in Windows.
Right, but I could counter that with saying ANSI C then is write once, run anywhere, as long as you have all of the compiler tools and all of the libraries.
And that's the same thing with Java. So how come Java is purported to be write once, run anywhere, when it's really no better than ANSI C? I think we're both saying the same thing.
No, I disagree. Because with Java, you can just give somebody one file, a jar file, a WAR file, an ear file, which is an enterprise archive. You can give them that one file that has everything in it, and as long as they have the virtual machine, they can just run it. Now, if the jar file doesn't contain all of the libraries, you need those external libraries too. But
all right, but as long as the virtual machine is there, you just said it.
Right, yeah, as long as the virtual machine is there. But it doesn't require the user to recompile it. You don't have to know about make files and all this other kind of stuff.
Well, that's
true. You just type Java and then the name of the jar file, and you're done.
Well, that's true that you do not have to recompile it, but it's still the same to me. They're both just as ridiculous to me. Neither one of them is write once, run anywhere, but I don't think, just saying that for Java, I just don't think it's any more appropriate than it is for anything else.
Well, but for Java, it involves one less step. With ANSI C, it would be compile and then run. But for Java, it would just be run with this virtual machine.
Right. Well, and, you know, same thing does hold true with C as far as if you use some libraries that aren't available on their destination computer, you're going to have to bring those over there, too.
Yeah.
So that's
yeah.
that's
you can compile things statically so it includes everything also, but yeah. not everybody does that.
Right. So.
And if it's pre-compiled, it's got to be pre-compiled for your system. So
well, for the architecture.
Just download the static binary for every system in the world. It doesn't work. So.
No.
I don't know. I kind of agree with the... with the run anywhere bit, for me, it's not the problem of having the virtual machine. I understand there's no way around it. That's, like I said, that's your bridge to the operating system.
How about the Mono project? Let's use that as an example. That's a project to run .NET applications under Linux, right?
Right.
All right, so it's not exactly a virtual machine, but it's an environment that will allow you to write your code once on a Windows box, your .NET code, and run it over on a Linux box. So basically, it's accomplishing the same thing.
Yeah.
To me, in my mind, anyway, of what you're describing. Is that right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So
Java and .NET, I don't really know all too much about the whole .NET framework. Again, I've programmed in it, but I don't know, the very low-level specifics of it. But, to run a .NET application, you need the .NET framework. You got to download the 1.1 or 2.0, whatever your application calls for, or now 3.0 with Vista. You got to download that, and if you want to run it on Linux, you got to download Mono, and if you want to run it on BSD, you got to download Mono for that, and compile Mono for that. So you're in the same boat if you want to run .NET applications as if you want to run Java applications.
If you want Java apps, you got to download the virtual machines.
Right, exactly. But for me, the thing is, since Java was not written by Microsoft, that better support on all platforms for it. You'd be hard-pressed to find, a real personal computer platform that doesn't have its own virtual machine that's well-tested and works. Whereas the Mono project, I don't know if you've tried to run anything with the Mono project. Things do work, but if you're just trying to run a straight-up .NET application with Mono, it doesn't work.
Well, I don't know that Mono's final release of any kind. I think it's still in beta form, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely not all there, but that's my point. Java is way further ahead years and years than Mono.
Oh, sure. No doubt about that. No doubt about that. Well, is there anything else we want to talk about Java then before we...
I don't know. I wish we had, as always, I wish we had more time to do it. I wish I had a little more time to prepare and think about it. I know we're kind of like doing a stream of consciousness and rambling a little bit, but hopefully the parts of it to get across to people are easy to deploy, easy to debug, easy to move from machine to machine, as long as you're using the same, you're using Tomcat or whatever on all your machines, stuff like that. Very maintainable, forces you to use objects to be object oriented, which to me initially seemed like a pain, but now that I've gotten used to it, helps me keep my source code very organized, and has made my ability to develop applications just that much faster, because now I have a lot of code that's reusable. I just find myself using code from different projects all over the place. So I have 3 or 4 Java projects all going right now.
Is there a lot of code out there on the global interweb that you can hijack and use for, since it's portable?
There's a lot of free code out there. There's a lot of libraries. There's an asterisk library called Asterisk Java that I've been using. That's kind of my big secret behind all the Freak Factor and Bell's Mind stuff right now.
Nice.
And the other thing, your favorite company in the world, Google.
Oh, no.
Google has this thing called the Google Web Toolkit. Now, I mentioned SWT before, which is the Swing Toolkit for building graphical applications. The Google Web Toolkit is a way to build web applications, Ajax-style web applications, like Google Maps and Google Mail, all that stuff, with Java. Now, the cool thing about it is you write Java code that creates a text box or creates, some type of image or something like that. You debug this Java code in Google's little web browser that pops up. So you can step through all of your Java code and say, okay, when the user clicks this button, pop this image up in their browser, or move this text box, and you can do animation, all kinds of other stuff. You do that. You build your application in Java. When you're done, you run the Google compilation script. It compiles your Java into JavaScript, another standard that I know you love, and you can make browser-side, again, Ajax-style applications in JavaScript without actually knowing any JavaScript. So all of the stuff in the interface that I have here was written in Java, but runs in your browser as JavaScript, if that makes sense at all.
I don't know if it does anymore.
I know, it's all confusing. But just think about it like this. In order to write my interface, I didn't need to know any JavaScript at all. All I had to do was use the Google Web Toolkit, pretend like I was writing a regular graphical application, and then Google somehow, through the magic of their JavaScript compiler, turns it into JavaScript for me, and it just runs magically. So...
Well, I mean, there's something to be said for rapid replication development, for RAD development, but I don't know. I just wish I understood the fundamentals of how and why it's designed the way that it is better. Mm-hmm. But that would probably make for some pretty dry radio, so I guess that's pretty much all the damage we can do on it for this week.
Yeah.
Google bought DoubleClick. What do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, I heard that somewhere. I thought DoubleClick was like one of the most evil companies in the world, but...
Well, Google is not evil, of course, so...
Well, maybe they'll turn DoubleClick into, like, something really nice.
Yeah, right, tracking all of our movement on the interweb. See, DoubleClick got into problems, Oxy. I hear you got me on there. Oh, why did I have to go and bring this up? I'm going to stop. DoubleClick, of course, is the company that pushed forward banner ads back in the day, and... little cookies back in early browser days, and they tracked everywhere that you were going so they could see what sites you frequented by the cookie, the tracking, and they got in a lot of trouble with it over privacy and whatnot, some of the things I complain that Google's doing. Well, now Google has bought their entire database of all the stuff that they've tracked, and now that they own it, they can easily tie that into your Google account, so if you have any information that DoubleClick's been tracking on you and the websites you visit, Google's got that now, so... Once again, Google's database is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Big Brother is watching, and his name is Google.
Awesome. I love it.
I
can't wait to buy more Google stock.
$400 a share or some shit like that? That's craziness.
It's a bargain. I wish it was $1,000 a share.
I could buy it
at that price.
If it was $1,000 a share, all the actual... Google people who own stock in their own company would all be so rich that they'd all quit and Google would die. Or they'd use all that money to buy even more stuff to grow even bigger.
Yeah, to make a bigger Googleplex.
Mm. Wow. Anyway, I digress. We'll leave that for discussion by someone else. Let's see.
That's all the time we have?
Yeah, well, we got, I don't know, we got about 10, 15 minutes.
Mm.
Yeah, that's
all
it.
30 minutes?
So by the time we do all our closing stuff here, we'll be just about out of time. But we can talk dirty afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be on Freak Factor.
We can sing our Lollipron song.
Oh, my God. Go for it. Come on.
No
go
way.
For it.
Nope. Can't do that one on the air. Nobody wants to hear me. I did the Janet Jackson singing one time. That was about as much as you get.
Oh, man.
Anyway.
That was great, though. That was just pure genius.
Dude, you know what we should do? We should go on American Idol next year and sing that in the tryouts. That would definitely make the interweb.
No, I don't know. Do you think that they would get it?
Probably not, but they'd put me through. I'd dress up like a schoolgirl or something. They'd put me through to make
me...
Wow. Yeah, wouldn't that be awesome?
Oh, my God. That definitely would not make it on TV.
How hot is that? Is that sexy talk?
That is sexy talk.
You want
talk
to make sexy
right
time?
I like.
Oh, man. Well, let's see. Reminder for everybody listening that your local BinRev meetings are this weekend. If you have one, I do, so I will be attending that. So hopefully you have some new people coming out to that one. Some people on the forum said they might give it a shot this weekend, so hopefully we'll see people there. Shouts this week. Shouts to MC Frontalot, MC Lars, and Optimus Rhyme. They are on tour right now. Go check out frontalot.com or OptimusRhyme.com or MCLars.com. I'm sure they all have the schedule, the tour schedule out there. Go check them out if they are coming near you. I think they're on the west side right now, but be coming back east hopefully sometime soon, a few months. Shouts to Droops and Enigma. And what do you got?
You know, I did have a whole bunch of shouts to people that have been helping me debug some Bell's Mind stuff, but their names are all escaping me now.
All right. Well, shouts to them.
I guess I have shouts to nobody then.
Oh, man. None at all.
No. No, actually, you know what? I don't know how to pronounce his name, so I think he's a PLA guy. His handle is Yauch or Yuck or something like that.
Yauch.
Y-A-U-C-H.
Yauch, right?
Yauch.
Is he named after Adam Yauch?
I read something about pronouncing it on the PLA boards a long time ago, and I apologize that I don't remember exactly how, but he's been giving me a lot of information about things that are working and not working and stuff that he wants to see brought back because it hasn't been re-implemented yet. He has been the best source of motivation for the Bell's Mind revival. So, shout to him.
Cool. I thought that was a Beastie Boys reference. I thought Yauch was one of the Beastie Boys.
The hell do I know?
I don't know. You don't know anything about rap. Except Gangstar!
Yeah, buddy.
How about Melly Mel?
You know, I heard some Melly Mel on XN the other day.
Really?
It was really terrible.
Oh, you better watch your mouth. Let's see, what else? Site of the Week actually comes from Not Theory tonight. As soon as we're done with the show, I'm going right back to the Site of the Week. It is handdrawngames.com. That's HANDDRAWNGAMES, handdrawngames.com. And they have this little, I don't know, is it Java, Shockwave? I don't know what the hell it is. Some kind of web browser game, Tower Defense.
Yeah, I think it's called, I think it's Flash.
Is it Flash? Okay. Flash game.
I'm actually playing it right now, and it's awesome.
You're playing it while we're doing the show, you douche.
Whatever.
So go check it out, play Tower Defense, and save your score. Put it in group DDP, and you can see how you're doing against us, because I kind of suck sore at it. But we'll see. By this time next week, maybe I'll be poning noobs. Binary Revolution Radio is provided by Caro.net. Go check out Caro.net for your hosting needs. Email us, of course, radio@binrev.com. Feedback on any portion of the show or to put us in place about our Java mistakes, which I'm sure there were some. Or if you are, and only if you are, an expert in Java, contact us because I would love to do a show and talk about some of the fundamentals and the basics and the underlying structure of how Java works, the design, what it does and why it does it, some of the nuts and bolts of it, but only if you really know it well. So email me, radio@binrev.com, and we will see if we can work out an episode in the future. Certainly, Java and all the different flavors is a topic we could probably do 10 episodes on, to be honest, or really could. So, I don't know. We'll see where we go with that. Closing music tonight is called Warriors. It's from Metamystics Incorporated. So, that is going to do it. Not Theory, thank you, my friend, for being on the show once again.
No problem.
And next time you go to Germany, give me a call. I'll go with you. We'll go over there, bang some chicks with hairy armpits. Get some lolly prawn. Wait a minute, they don't have that in Germany. Where would we have to go to get that? Some other
The Czech Republic.
There you go. Czech Republic or one of those Russian provinces or something like that. And that's it. So we will see everybody, we hope anyway, next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.
Shit.
See that dude over there with the skates? Over there. He's after you. He's got some guys with
him. I know they're on my ass. And now they know I know it.
If you step to X, you best get your death plot. I wreck the feds, get left with your next shot. I etch you red with text or the Xbox. Guillotine style, your head in a rest stop. Bomb blitz, we move crowds, I promise. Your best inspect and wreck like you Hans Blit. Combat reptile, spit to kill. Sever up north, you know Kim Jong-il. Blaze like the taste of pasted wasabi. Hotter than the bomb, they drop Nagasaki. Stone Cold Stallone, drag.
and Rocky. Right hook to jaws, you dropping promptly. Problematic, blast few degrees. Lines crafted to laugh at music scenes. A fusion scene, known to chew MCs. The half you act is wishing you were me. This is but a rap for the cats who be cutting class. Fuck with that. Get a mash like you suck attached, running fast. Or get smacked with another blast. Crafted raps is fat like Thundercats.
Speaking of the dragon, now it's ending the myth. And I'ma kill the mic over this funk Havana riff. I'm the master motherfucking author for the ages. I wrote all the pages, created all the rages. Spat more buck on beats than 12 gauges. You motherfucking cats ending up the short changes. Me and X cover all the top nameless. Kyle L break the stasis, I am face. It's the dawn of the dead when I roll out the bed. Radiation flow like I'm covered in lead. It's been said when you clash with the meta crew. Have a medical crew on speed dial number 2. Even Stephen King can't begin what we do to you. We leave your body burning, but it isn't the flu, it's true. Your left shell shot, lyrically bombs drop, physically, seriously injured.
What the fuck?
Check 1, sign of 7 into song 1, 2. Once again, I become your Waterloo hit 3. Disease fatal when you lack vaccines. Red pain like gangrene, ain't the process like a knee.
Seems the microphone skins detected impotence. Coming out swinging your stick, looking ridiculous. Dipping in the biggest of the bins, marked bargain. It's the margin you belong in, the long side of a coughing underground, starving with the Martians for air. Try to resurrect yourself, but I'm keeping you there. To be fair, your land there bears one distinction. A very special chance to study mass extinction. If you pop another shot of this, you know we got a bottle. This I'm aiming for your cartilage, just charging all my cartridges. Heavy hitting, slaughtering, it's bothering your dome. Woke up and said, what's up, my home planet was blown. Gemstones that you are nothing's too fine for what you want. Everybody want a rhyme to watch down. They let the first was the worst of the best. Your heart beating IRS. Leave SDX in the myth to do the rest. Hijack verbal spaceship. Smack y'all a facelift. Back on this bitch like a glitch in the Matrix. Deja vu and fuck you and your crew. Stack of small rappers jaw tapping in my shoe. I hit him with industrial bleach. Not a ghost, but I'm gone. Leave him whiter than sheets on rap sheets.
And y'all weak.
Strap you in like a roller coaster. Flame tongue spitting out burns like a broken toaster. Me mugging on a most wanted poster with an ample stack of samples and a Kenny Roger roaster cooking up the fat beats. Down on the street, I build the foundation of my nation like a Greek. 10 times a week, rhyme while I sleep in the bed. Counting out beats like they sheep in my head. Coming up with meat for my song, street flowing and I'm spitting like I just sprung a leak.
This is crack repeat, you dig a masterpiece over a Latin beat, causing the Mac defeat. When it's boom bap, do rap blast in the streets. Every mystic's hater gonna have to beat. Rhymes taper than cater to all hot blazers. Style unlocked like you walk by Frazier. Cats who rap about thugs and hoes keep coming up short like they Mugsy Bogues. No, I chose the show that flows the most. Got your domes rolling, so you know I'm ghost.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Anytime I spit a shit, I get elected to the Senate slingshot. Get injected to the planet and leave stars the size of boulevards. Hit you so hard, you only coming back with the green card, homie. You coming back slapped on your back like a retard. Pull that shicey law shit, get your ass debarred. Next 3 bars, you get Billmon. Keep you in a jail cell like your steel cars. Hide the steel bars, take your pen and your note cards. Leave you choked up like asthmatic hits cars.
You warriors are good. Real good.
The best.
The best.